This Abba Isaiah had two disciples, Peter and Eliseos. Peter was the disciple who advanced greatly at his elder's side. Eliseos suffered a shipwreck, a spiritual shipwreck. His mother loved Christ and was devoted to the monastic life. His father, on the other hand, was half a monk. Eliseos, after a certain history out in the world, came and became a disciple of Abba Isaiah. When his father learned exactly where his child Eliseos was living as a monk, he sent several camels loaded with provisions, and by the young men who led the camels he sent letters as well. And in the letters he wrote that Eliseos's mother was gravely ill. Eliseos, without his elder's blessing, opened the letters and read them. Abba, Isaiah was grieved at this act of his, and he takes the letters out of his hands and tears them up. From this arose the occasion for a very great clash. Eliseos began to have many evil logismoi, intrusive thoughts, against his elder. Within himself he reviled him, and spoke ill of him, and from this the devil took his occasion and opened a great wound in him. The elder, Abba Isaiah, would now rebuke him, now admonish him, and try to bring him back to his senses. But the downward path opened before Eliseos, very steep and exceedingly perilous. Then he even began openly to accuse and to slander his elder before the fathers. Since Abba Isaiah was renowned, and many brothers came to seek his counsel, as the brothers came to the Abba, Eliseos would sit at the door of his cell and speak ill of the elder to them. The brothers would say to him, "Do not, brother, accuse the elder, it is unseemly," and much more. But on no account would he give way in this malice of the demon, and it followed that he would do something even worse. Satan whispered to him that his elder was a sorcerer, and that it was by his sorceries that he had all this turmoil within him. And he asked Abba Isaiah to let him go to his gravely ill mother. Abba Isaiah says to him, "Your mother, if you go down into the world, she will already have died. I am going down," he says, "and I tell you, I do not give you my blessing." And in the end, despising his elder's word, he went down to the city. And before he came down to the city, his mother had died. There in the city he went down to his own house, and everywhere he kept up his accusations. And at night he sees in his sleep that from the four sides of his house the demons are setting it on fire. And in truth, the demons had set it ablaze, and only with great effort did he get out of the house and escape being burned. He began shouting, "Abba Isaiah's magic has found me even here in my own home." He went to the bishop of the city and began saying the same things about the elder. But the bishop knew Abba Isaiah very well, and he said to him, "Let the deceitful lips be struck dumb, which speak lawlessness against the righteous with pride and contempt." And immediately, at the bishop's word, he became demon-possessed and wandered through the city. In the end, he became covered with sores and lay in the streets, a pitiful sight and a cause of great reproach to the monastic life. The Christ-loving people, the friends of monastics, saw some fathers who had come down from the skete and say to them, "Why do you not take this monk? He is a monk. Take him up to the skete. Here he brings shame on the monastic habit." Because of his wretched condition, he was not recognized. From what was said, they discovered that he was Eliseos, the disciple of Abba Isaiah. They take him up in sheets, place him on a camel, and carry him to the skete. The fathers of the skete called his fellow disciple Peter to come and see him. As soon as his brother Peter caught sight of Eliseos, he burst into tears and fell upon him and embraced him and kissed him with deep brotherly love. They decided to call the elder, and they sent for Abba Isaiah. And as soon as the elder saw his disciple in such a wretched state, he wept bitterly and said to him, "Do you see, my child, what a fault this was, and how the fall of pride is its own punishment?" And Eliseos answered, "I have seen, father. Through the things I suffered I have learned. Forgive me now. Have mercy on me, the unworthy one." And the elder made the sign of the cross over him, knelt down, offered a prayer, and the demon came out, and he was healed of scabies. The fathers saw how greatly beneficial this whole thing was, this event, so they called a monk skilled in calligraphy, and he wrote down the entire account in detail. And it remained in the archive of the skate. The example of Eliseos is deeply instructive. We see two disciples under a great Abba, the one who advanced and the other who failed, the same teachings, the same counsels, everything the same. Yet we see the one conquer the demon, while the other becomes obedient to the demon and ends up in that uttermost demonic state. Peter kept perfect obedience. The devil struck back, and the result and consequence was Elysios's terrible fall. But the mercy of God, which knows no limits or bounds, once again, through the prayers of the elder, who never ceased praying for him, provided the right opportunity, and he returned alive. There is no more beautiful or spiritually beneficial life than that of a monk living in obedience. Abba Moses, the Ethiopian, says, "Run, my children, to where obedience is." There is love there. There is progress. There is joy and inner happiness of soul. This road of wondrous obedience often becomes an uphill climb, hard, rough, and toilsome, whenever we insist on setting up our own will. But when the disciple cuts off and uproots his own will, behold the progress, behold the benefit. From this point on begins the ascent toward the revelation and manifestation of God within the soul. The disciple can live a spiritually happy life. The soul of the disciple becomes light when it casts off self-will, when he orders his logosmoi, his intrusive thoughts, according to the obedience of the fathers. That disciple walks the cleared road of salvation. Abba Palamon says, "He will say to me, 'The one who remains obedient to a spiritual father has no need to concern himself with the commandments of God.' What could be more beautiful than obedience? No life is so free from personal accountability as the life of one who is under obedience. When the disciple does everything in obedience, he has no account to render to God for anything. From then on, his road stands open toward heaven." We must continually study the law of God, the reading of the fathers, our unceasing prayer and meditation on death, and the departure of the soul. We must consider how we will pass through the aerial toll houses. That is where the great difficulty of the soul lies. The hour of death is fearful, but even more so is the passage of the soul through the toll houses of the demons. The demons have everything recorded in detail, and as the soul passes through the toll houses, it will see all of it written down. But the good disciple, who continually opens and lays bare his inner world to his spiritual father and elder, confessing everything with sincerity and truth, and correcting whatever is not going well, that disciple, as he passes through the toll houses, will have nothing at all to fear. His conscience will give him assurance, and this monk will be delivered from that great terror and fear, because his conscience will give him assurance before the end comes. It is a great blessing for the disciple to win the quiet of a clear conscience. That quiet is won through complete obedience. When he lays everything before his elder, he receives absolution, he is freed from every demonic influence, he advances on the spiritual road, and out of this whole good state, the quiet of conscience is born within him. The quiet conscience brings boldness before God. The boldness of a clear conscience frees a person from every danger of hell. That is why each of us should think and say, "I am under obedience, so why should I not do these simple things that will grant me so many gifts, that will count me worthy to cleanse my conscience, and to pass through the toll houses unhindered and without fear?" And the great success is to behold Christ, my judge, with a gracious countenance. As John Chrysostom says, we must strive to see the gracious countenance of the judge, and not, through some failure of ours, see him turn his face away from us at the hour of judgment. At the hour of judgment. The turning away of the divine countenance is the first taste the soul receives of eternal condemnation. But when we keep up a constant study of how to live rightly, how to uproot our own will, when we continually study the fathers, death, the toll houses, the judgment, hell, and paradise, when all of this is a constant meditation in our mind and in our heart, then by the grace of God it is impossible for us to fail of our salvation. All this study and this way of life keeps the demons from assailing us. All this study is the health of the soul, just as someone who is healthy finds his life pleasant and succeeds in every area, so it is with the soul as well. When a person feels freedom from the passions, which means health of soul, then this soul, this health, grants him an inner well-being, and he senses God within him. Here the Father who is speaking turns to self-activating prayer. Self-activating prayer is nothing other than the enthronement of Christ within the heart. For Christ to come into a person's heart, all this labor must go before it, all this forceful effort, and this watchfulness, nepsis. We must not lose this opportunity. God has brought us here. We do not know how long the span of our life will be. That is why we must force ourselves constantly. Every day we should keep our study, our prayer, our silence, and our obedience to the daily schedule. Each day it should be like a spiritual work, just as we have our monastic task, and we say that each person has a task and works at it every day and knows exactly what he must do at his task. In exactly the same way, we should regard our spiritual life as a spiritual ministry entrusted to our soul. As day breaks and we begin our work, our task, let us also begin our spiritual task so that the two run side by side together. The body is working. The soul must work as well. Let the mouth say the prayer. Let the nose dwell upon the prayer. Let us be ready to face the demonic logismoi. A logismos rises up in us against God, against the brethren. We are also assailed by logismoi, intrusive thoughts about worldly things. All these thoughts must be confronted with the Jesus prayer, by disregarding them, or by answering them back. When we work like this every day, it is impossible not to learn the spiritual handiwork, impossible not to learn the spiritual art and science, our work, at our task, and in our common life. We must meditate on the name of Christ and not fall into idle talk. We engage in idle talk. Idle talk always leads to sin. When we speak idly, the demons come among us. They go first to one person, then to another, whispering, "Say this, say that." And so the idle talk begins with all its harmful consequences. But when the Jesus prayer is being said, the demons flee far away. They cannot bear to hear the name of Christ invoked. With the name of Jesus, scourge your enemies, says Abba John Climacus. But when we do not scourge the demons with the prayer, then they come, they draw near to us, and they strip us bare with 1,001 filthy logismoi.
I think.
Likewise, when we are at the common gathering in church, we go down to the church to sing hymns and to pray. Do the demons not come even into the church? There too they come and whisper 1,001 things to us, and there too we must be very watchful.
Be watchful.
In the same way, we must force ourselves in prayer at night as well. We should rise at the hour we ought to rise. With great eagerness, we should begin our rule of prayer. We should begin the noetic prayer. We should open the book. Study by night is very attentive. Prayer cleanses and brings peace to the nous and the heart, and whatever we read is imprinted very well within the nous, and the heart feels it, and study helps prayer, and prayer helps study. When negligence wars against us, then we must stir ourselves, do our rule of prayer, make more prostrations, cry out the Jesus prayer, and so this movement and exertion certainly drives off the demon of sleep. In short, the monk must, generally speaking, force himself. Without such forceful effort, we shall gain absolutely nothing. What we most need is to keep, as far as possible, fewer things in our mind. We must not let our nows wander here and there among many things. Whoever manages to hold only a few thoughts in his mind will incline toward the name of Christ, toward a meditation on death, a meditation on paradise, a meditation on the love of God. This meditation within the nous shuts out every other demonic meditation. When we give the nous spiritual work, we shut out the work of the demon. And when we hold this meditation, we will surely feel within our heart joy, peace, and whatever the good God grants. We must be watchful not to accept thoughts against the brothers. Many times it brings us an irritation, an inner turmoil, and upon that state it finds an opening, and it fills us with 1,001 logismoi, intrusive thoughts against the brothers. Then the monk needs to cut off every thought, to disdain it, to take up the prayer, and in this way to block all this demonic energy. We can also step aside for a few minutes in the cell with a prayer rope, with two prayer ropes, with an improvised prayer. The demon is driven off, the soul is brought to peace, and then all our thoughts of judging others cease.
Christ,